wrestling fans, welcome back to your favorite wrestling podcast, Ring Respect Radio, right here on the Video Bros Network. If you found us for the very first time, we're going to ask you to click the subscribe button down below and hit the notification bell. Give us a thumbs up and just show us a little bit of love. Get the name of Ring Respect Radio out there. I am Bobby Munson. I am one half of the Video Bros, and the other half of the Video Bros is on the line with me right now. He's the man with the angelic voice, the throat of the goat. You know him as Papa Smokes. How are you doing, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great, Munson. How are you wrestling fans doing out there?
Hopefully everybody's having a good old time, loving the wrestling that's available to them, and enjoying many of the great podcasts. Speaking of great podcasts, our friend Spencer Love joined us on the last episode of Ring Respect Radio. Great interview there. Go check that episode out again. Also, go check out Backbreaker Media over in Alberta. They've been great to us as well, too, and putting our name out there. We're all over the place now. We're on Podbean. We're on YouTube. I do a quick Google search of Ring Respect Radio. We're popping up in places I didn't even know existed, Papa Smokes. All the podcasts, they're picking up Ring Respect Radio these days.
Yeah, isn't that a great thing, too? And it felt good, I got to say, from the humble beginnings we started with to just tap on the podcast app on my iPhone and see that Ring Respect Radio is get put up there by our good buddies at Backbreaker Media. It's just, it's a thrill to think that we could be getting out to some more ears and build a better audience and have some good conversations about wrestling.
Yeah, it's been fantastic so far, and just thank you to everybody who continues to support us and all of you who've just started joining us. Thank you as well, too. Continue to show that love. Here on Ring Respect Radio, we like to talk about a lot of different topics, and lately we've been doing a lot of these recap reviews of MLW Fusion. Major League Wrestling have been putting on some fantastic shows since their comeback after the pandemic. Pretty much locked most wrestling companies out of business for a while, but MLW Fusion came back. They did great at the end of 2020, and 2021's kicking off in the high gear. And we've been talking about this one for weeks on the show. This is Filthy Island. I said to you, Papa Smokes, this one kind of deserves its own episode for so many reasons. Some great, maybe not, some not so great. We'll get into more details as we go along here, but Filthy Island, they've been promoting this for weeks. Team Filthy and Filthy Tom Lawler going to be putting on this. I guess this would be an episode of MLW Fusion, kind of, but this is their take on it. Almost a play on Dana White's Fight Island, and we know about Tom Lawler and his background in MMA. So here we were. We're finally going to get to find out, and I guess the first thing I got to say, Tom Lawler on commentary for this, along with Dan Lambert. And no ropes on the ring that's set up there on Filthy Island. Maybe even before we get started, why don't you just give the fans a little bit of a rundown of what this all looked like in case they haven't seen it, Papa Smokes.
Like we've talked about in previous episodes leading up to this, we were unsure of what Filthy Island was going to be at the very beginning. We knew it would be an episode of the show, but as we went along and got more information, it became clear that it was going to be Tom Lawler's own fight card, and he made it look more like an MMA-style fighting card, like you said, without ropes on the ring, so that there was more of a grappling-based thing on the mat there. But I think this whole thing was a satire and a parody of Fight Island that Dana White was trying to get going to skirt over the COVID issues and still have his pay-per-view fights. I don't really know of Lawler's background with Dana White, but I'm assuming it's not good, because he's definitely mocking him here. The whole compound that Filthy Island takes place in was extremely junky, and they had some old couches and some drunken bums kind of watching the action and stuff, and they're all the time Lawler and Lambert are trying to pretend like it's this paradise island and everything, when really they've thrown together a pretty junky little production. It's funny, it was pretty interesting, and the one thing I liked about it, outside of the satire he was making, is that it was just kind of nice to have a different looking episode of the show, not in the same venue. not with that same ring and such. It was just kind of something different and something fun to do. And they changed the locale to Kauai, Hawaii. And I mean, it kind of looked nice in a way. This show was kind of felt like a patchwork thing that kind of came together in spite of itself. But I think it achieved what it intended to, and that was just a little breath of fresh air for the viewer and a little fun had at the expense of Dana White.
Yeah, and then, of course, the different commentary. We had Tom Lawlor and Dan Lambert, like I mentioned, and quite a few good jokes coming out of, especially out of Tom Lawlor. Dan Lambert got into it as it went along. I mean, there was some slams at Dana White that I found in there, too, that I thought were funny. But, man, did I have a good chuckle at the low-key comments that they were making. And nothing against low-key, but when they're coming up with names like low pay-per-view buy rate and low IQ and stuff. And I think the low IQ one has stuck even in... more recently on MLW as well, too. I had a good chuckle at some of those comments from the two of them.
Well, they were actually pretty good commentators. Aside from that, I thought like they had their chemistry quite good. And like Lambert is quite a good speaker. He's an intelligent guy and a sarcastic jerk at the same time, too. And Lawler's very funny and has a wacky sense of humor. But they actually... they did the commentary quite well. They sold what they had to sell, and they didn't bring up what they didn't want to, and I thought they worked out fairly well, at least for one episode, as a commentary team.
Yeah, and the nice thing is Tom Lawlor, a very knowledgeable man when it comes to holds and stuff, too, so we're getting a lot of talk about the holds that were being seen inside some of the fights here on Fight Island, or sorry, Filthy Island, mind you. It was great to hear. I really enjoyed the commentary side of it. I think it kept the flow of what we saw going throughout the entire episode and would, you know, eventually lead to what we got in the end of the episode, which we will get to eventually here too. So I think it's time to maybe just kick off Filthy Island from the get-go. Very first matchup that we had on the card. This was Dominic Cabrini taking on, let me try to pronounce this here, Wanu Luo, is that how we pronounce it, or did you get something different there, Pop Smokes?
I'd say that's quite sufficiently close enough, yeah.
All right, sounds good. Yeah, so what'd you think of this first encounter here from Filthy Island?
Yeah, well, first of all, we had to get used to this ring with no ropes and being out in the middle of this field somewhere, and it really was kind of bizarre and funny to watch at the beginning. I knew you would be enjoying the music man they had there, which was everybody's favorite preliminary talent, Bud Heavy, working the ghetto blaster and signaling the guys to come out. Quite extremely funny to me, for sure. And this just looked like a crappy backyard production. But the thing was, they had a good roster and some interesting matches going on.
Yeah, and I kind of want to throw it out there. Bud Heavy, if you ever want to run music for PPW down the road, feel free to give myself and Papa Smokes a shout, because we got work for you there. We could use a good music guy here, Prairie Pro Wrestling.
Well, and Spencer Love has kind of inspired me, too. Why don't we send an email to Bud Heavy and try and interview him on the show?
I like that, Tyler. That sounds like a good challenge. I think Bud Heavy would fit in perfectly here on Ring Respect Radio. So I think we should do that. Good idea, Pop Smokes. We're going to get on that for sure.
I bet you nobody else has had him as a guest on their podcast yet.
No, I think that could gather a lot of interest for sure, definitely. So so this match, obviously, this one used to, in the same way a lot of kickoff matches on other MLW shows are used for, to really get one of their names over. And Dominic Cabrini, somebody that they want to get put over, against essentially a prelim talent and everything. And that's what we got. We got Cabrini getting in there and being able to show what he can do, get his shit in, and basically win via tap out, making himself look strong moving forward.
Yeah. And he also played the coward at the beginning of that match, because he bailed out of the ring once he saw his unusual but large opponent, and was telling Tom Lawlor at ringside, "I'm not doing this guy too bad." They made him get back in, and of course his tremendous jiu-jitsu skill kicked in, and he quite easily got the choke out win. But they're building Garini as a cowardly heel type character, and I think it's a good one for him. He's obviously a talented athlete and all that, but he still doesn't seem quite completely comfortable in the pro wrestling setting yet, and that'll just take time. He's got his tag team now and everything, and he's in a faction with a top guy in MLW and Tom Lawler, so I think that'll just come along with time.
Yeah, it was a good way to kick this night off and everything like that. I enjoy it. I like Dominic Guarini. I think there's a lot to be said about his work, and I think we're going to see some great things out of him. So good win there for him, being able to establish him and even, you know, in some sense, flesh him out a little bit more. Because, again, he's kind of been a little bit silent, you know, in the background as part of this Team Filthy. Barta's the tag team, Violence is Forever. We got to see a little bit more of his personality shine through in this match, and I think that was a very good positive coming out of this one.
Yeah, agreed.
So from there, I believe we had the start of the Aztec Jungle fight between Mil Muertes and Savio Vega, and dubbed as a glorious offer of violence. This one, the Aztec Jungle fight, I don't know where I really want to sit on this one, because we're going to have to come back to it later on in what we're talking about, because it started here, it ends later in the night, it goes on multiple times, but this was, I hate to say this, Pop Smokes, this felt poorly put together, and it was two guys that are maybe just a little bit too far in their career to really do anything too exciting, so it kind of came off very sluggish and very tiresome in many ways in this one.
Yeah. The main thing I liked about this fight was just the idea that it was held in a different spot than the other matches in Hawaii. This was supposed to be at Chichen Itza, which is in Mexico, and they had it at night, and it was meant to have kind of the supernatural type feel that Selena De La Renta has been invoking with Mil Muertes about, she wants a sacrifice to be made, a blood sacrifice, and she's been having those promos where she's been talking about so much kind of witchy, supernatural stuff. So this kind of reminded me a little bit of the Barclay bare knuckle brawl between Hammerstone and Mads Kruger from a couple weeks ago. They went on location. They had a little special gimmick match, a little special gimmick fight kind of. But you know, when it comes down to it, there's not a lot you can do without a ring and all that. And this ended up being some brawling and some punching and a shaky camera, and the commentators were sufficiently creeped out that they didn't want to be there. They were also very uncomfortable, and it was an interesting concept and all that, but this match didn't totally do it for me. I like Mil Muertes a whole bunch, but like you, I guess we'll be coming back to this match because the end doesn't happen until later in the show, but I was a little skeptical about this one, and it never really picked up in my mind after that either.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, Papa Smokes. And so yeah, again, we're going to come back to it, not spend too much time here. Right after they kind of opened up this idea happening, we had a promo from Los Parks, in particular L.A. Park, coming forth, and he wants to lay down the challenge to Alexander Hammerstone. He wants that the open weight championship Hammerstone's been wearing for almost two consecutive years now. So L.A. Park making that challenge to Hammerstone. A couple of questions here on this one I got to ask. Is Hammerstone going to be able to handle L.A. Park? And not saying that he wouldn't normally be able to, but he's gotten himself so in deep with Contra and Mads Kruger that having another faction of guys coming at him, is this going to turn out to be too much for our boy Hammer?
Yeah, that's a totally fair question, too. And as we've seen with Lost Parks, they don't care if they fight fair. We just saw them win the tag team championship a couple of weeks ago against the Von Erichs. They pulled every trick out of the book, all the dirty tricks they used, including Tom Lawler, a special referee who was dirty as hell in that. And having another member of the Parca family hiding under the ring and substituting himself in as a fresh guy without the referee's knowledge. And yeah, they've shown that they're completely underhanded. And as LA Park said in that promo, they had the tag team championships, but wouldn't that open weight championship be a nice gift for the new owner of the promotions that Selena De La Renta is working with? And so yeah, I think they also have their eyes on the heavyweight championship too. So Lost Park's really just driven, excuse me, and motivated to get all the gold in MLW. They want it all, and it's looking like they won't stop till they get it.
Yeah, and I think you bring up the owner of Azteca Underground saying it would be a great thing for him. Is this not, I believe, the first time in the night where they mentioned the name El Jefe?
Yeah. That just means the chief or whatever, the leader, I guess. But they're not going to say him by name yet. But definitely the Mexican side of the talent roster, including Lost Parks, are wanting to get in good with the new owner for sure.
Okay, yeah. So I wanted to clear that up because I think that's the first mention of anybody using the term El Jefe and stuff like that. And it does get brought up here again really soon as well. So I just wanted to get that clear. So from there, we actually went over to a video of Alexander Hammerstone and Richard Holiday arriving on the island of Hawaii. Little confused about why they were asked to come out to Filthy Island, but I guess a personal invite from Filthy Tom Lawler himself, inviting a couple of spectators to see what he's got going down there in Hammerstone and Holiday.
Yeah. I was also kind of confused by this too. They weren't slated for any matches or anything, but just a little appearance. And I think it's just another thing to show the stroke that Hammerstone has in that company. Whether anyone is actually allied with him or not, they still know he's one of the top stars in the company, if not the top star. So everyone kind of wants a piece of Hammerstone. If you're around him in MLW these days, you're probably doing pretty good.
Yeah, so again, that's going to flesh out a little bit more later in the night. Again, we go back now to more of Mil Muertes and Savio Vega. This time, we got a glimpse of the actual Aztec temple in this shot. And then on the screen, it said that El Jefe says, "Blood will pour for all believers." So an interesting mention here, and maybe piqued at my interest a little bit more about what was going to go down with Savio and Mil Muertes. I can't say it piqued it incredibly much because, again, I still knew what the limitations were going to be, both with the style of match and with the competitors. I'd taken nothing away, again, from Mil Muertes, who I do enjoy a lot. It's just, again, you're taking two guys who have been around quite a long time, both bigger guys, both going to have that kind of, type of style that's going to maybe slow things down a little bit, and kind of just felt a little bit out of place. But again, this one little bit of promo and that video, I think, was probably one of the highlights I can pick out of this entire Aztec Jungle fight so far.
Yeah. And I like that you brought up, again, some of Selena's lines about sort of the occult and sort of Inca or Mayan mysticism about the blood pouring and stuff. I found it interesting because I went to Cancun, Mexico a couple of years in the Yucatan Peninsula over on the east side there, and I went to Chichen Itza as a tour and saw the old pyramids. And in fact, that is part of it, is that we all know that there were blood sacrifices of humans back in those days in those areas. But they also they have a part where they would do some of the sacrifices towards the top of the pyramid, and then they had actual small little troughs kind of where the blood would run down, and it would touch like all of the pyramid and then come down to the bottom of it where the people were. And this is all highly symbolic in their worldview and in their religion and stuff. So I like those references to the occult and mystical past of the Yucatan people there. It just adds it adds a reality that kind of gives you a little chill when you think about it too, and you think that that stuff actually happened and that they're in that area where those things happened. And I thought it was nicely done. It made for a creepy atmosphere.
Yeah, and I hope nobody takes this the wrong way, that, you know, my I guess not big love for the actual finish or how this went down in this matchup, it has nothing to do with the build around it or any of the culture built around it, because that part of it is absolutely spot on and I love it. And I think that Selena and everybody involved are doing a fantastic job over there. I just, again, we'll get to it in a bit, but this the execution of the fight fell a little flat. But again, we'll pick up on that here shortly. So from there, we had another fight scheduled. This one scheduled to be Kevin Koo of Team Filthy, Violence is Forever, taking on our boy Zenshi. And before we even get started, man, Zenshi, once again, what did he come out of the fucking trees there, Papa Smokes? I mean, he dove out of nowhere into the attack on Kevin Koo. I popped out of my seat right at that moment, I got to say.
Yeah, we just spent the last episode stroking off Zenshi, even in a losing effort here. And then he comes to the next episode, he comes in his match and makes the coolest entrance of anybody, flying into the ring out of a tall tree where no one even saw him up there. That was just beautifully done.
Yeah. And I got to say, there was that spot he did in the corner post there where he held himself sideways on the post. Very, very athletic. Yeah. Maybe he was getting a little bit too much with the old posing, showing off the athletics a bit and stuff, and could have got a little bit more down to the serious nature of it, because he had already done the big spot coming out of the trees. But again, Zenshi, he's young. He wants to be able to show that he can do these things. And I mean, take nothing away from him. I mean, fuck, I'd never be able to do that if I dreamed of it, kind of thing, Papa Smokes. I mean, that athleticism is bar none when it comes to Zenshi. And then he gets in there with a guy the caliber of Kevin Koo, and we really got to see, I think, Kevin Koo take off in this matchup. We got to see exactly what he's all about, and I like the look and style of Kevin Koo.
Yeah, I do too. I wasn't familiar with him until he started in MLW. I've seen a couple of the tag matches. He's been all right, but he never really knocked it out of the park in my mind, kind of thing. And but in this match, I liked this singles match because we got to see a bit more of his shit, the kind of move sets that he has, and the kind of ring awareness and all that. And yeah, in there against a game opponent, as we know, Zenshi, he doesn't win a lot of matches, but he's there, and he's a game opponent, and this was a good match. Koo pulled off the win, but just barely.
Yeah, Zenshi getting closer and closer to that big win we keep talking about, and we keep praising him on the show, and I'm going to continue to praise him here, Papa Smokes. He's been a very big highlight for me on the MLW shows, and I didn't think I'd say that. Again, I like watching big guy fights. I really enjoy watching it because that's the kind of shit we grew up on. But, you know, hey, these guys can really surprise us when they come out and make things interesting and show some great skill there. And that's exactly what we got. I mean, I can't get over the jump out of the trees did it for me. To me, I put it right down there. That is the highlight of Filthy Island, bar none. Zenshi, once again, making the highlight of the show.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. And they had another couple of nice spots in that match because Koo uses as his finisher that full Nelson suplex.
Yeah.
And he tried it on Zenshi the first time, and Zenshi flipped right out of it onto his feet. Wow, that looked really great.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting that because that's not a lot of room and not a lot of height to get that full backflip in there, but he got it and landed done perfectly. But then, of course, that ended up being a finishing move for that match later. Koo hit that full Nelson suplex, and ooh, that looked completely devastating on a more slight frame like Zenshi. He landed hard on his shoulders and neck, and not unsafe, I don't think, but the spot looked really, really good. And yeah, convincing win for Koo. So Guarini and Koo got their singles wins on Filthy Island. That keeps their tag team looking strong. It keeps Team Filthy looking strong, and I'm interested to see more from Ku in the future. He's obviously a martial artist that is transitioning over to pro wrestling, so he looks a little bit green in the ring. He's just trying to meld the two styles together, I suppose, of the jiu-jitsu grappling and martial arts fighting, and plus the professional wrestling. He'll also get there, and he's coming along nicely, I think. And to have those real martial artists that make the transition just adds to the intensity and believability of the talent, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, both guys looking great. And yeah, like you said, that finishing move from Kevin Ku, just a thing of beauty. And Zenshi sells it so damn well, too. I mean, like you said, it looked powerful, it looked strong, but it was definitely done safe. I watched closely on it. Man, Zenshi takes one hell of a fantastic bump. The guy knows how to make other guys look fantastic, and what a match. Great job by both. Again, I'm picking it as my personal favorite piece of personal favorite piece of actual wrestling on the entire show came from this matchup, I'd have to say.
Yeah, and I think our praise for Zenshi is warranted in a way too, because as you notice, he has a match on every single show, so that shows that he's excellent preliminary talent and excellent at getting over the stars that are above him on the card. So. Yeah, he gets constant and steady work. What more can you ask for, right?
Yeah, and constant steady coverage on Ring Respect Radio. So keep it up, Zenshi. We're loving you. So, from there, we had the Von Erichs kicking in and talking about things. They're on their ranch. They are doing, I believe this is where they kicked in with Instagram Live. So we were talking before the show went on the air and talking a little bit about how some of this feels like it might have been pre-taped and most likely was pre-taped, but I believe the Von Erichs probably did an actual Instagram Live there and made everything look perfectly throughout the show from that point of view and everything like that. And we're able to play it into the later happenings in the episode that we'll talk about. But while they're doing this, they're talking about Filthy Tom Lawler. They're talking about the main event, having to be there for low key. Want to make sure that he's not going to get, you know, himself into a bad situation there, being surrounded by members of Team Filthy. And so they said, crash that party, Pop Smokes, crash that party.
Yeah. And you knew that when Filthy Island was going to be in the Von Erichs' backyard, that they probably were going to make an appearance of some kind. We just didn't know when, but their enemies were kicking around in the same area, so they're going to take that opportunity to raise some hell.
Yeah, and looking forward to seeing how that pans out later in the night. Right after that, we went right back to that Aztec Jungle match again. Here we are once again talking about it. We saw some kicks and punches from both men. And, yeah, some more scared commentators. And that's about all I've got to add to the Aztec Jungle match beginning there. How about you, Papa Smokes?
Yeah, I'm looking at my notes here. And, I started to write down the combatants in the match. And I was ready to take some notes. And then I never really did take any notes because I didn't see what there was to write. There was some brawling and such going on in this, but until the conclusion of this match, we won't have too much of interest to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. So from there, something else was added to this show. We had an interview where Alicia Toot was interviewing TJP, talking about basically questioning on whether or not he is a bully, talking about his betrayal of Buku Dao or whatever recently after their tag team title match loss, and trying to basically get to the idea that TJP might be a bully. But of course, TJP had his say in it, and he doesn't believe that he's a bully. He believes that he's really just kind of tuning the young guy in and stuff like that, and believing that his mentor in Buku Dao needed to show him more respect.
Yeah, I kind of liked this segment. I thought it was very interesting because I always think that the most compelling stories or angles in professional wrestling are the things that are real, like real drama that they bring into the angle kind of. And I'm not trying to say that TJP and Buku Dao have real heat with each other, but this is a real issue in wrestling and in the rest of the world at large about bullying and and about people's feelings being hurt and people being in distress over bullying type situations. And I thought Alicia brought it up very well, as she seemed like a very caring person about that and was worried about Buku Dao. And I thought TJP was quite well spoken too, and the way he really flared up when she used that word bully, he said, "Are you kidding me? Like, you should have seen when I got into the business, and I had guys above me, and they didn't give a damn about me either. And you know, I put my head down and I kept my mouth shut and I learned and I did my job, and whatever happened to me is gone. I got past that because I weathered the storm and I was strong and I got through it." And that's what he needs to do too. And I was kind of listening to that thinking, well, like, that makes a lot of sense. I don't support bullying in the least, and I'm not supporting an argument that supports it. But, you know, there's two sides to every story too. And it was interesting to hear TJP talk about his early days in the business as well.
Yeah, and I mean, those mentions are great mentions, because if anyone like ourselves who have been backstage or been a part of seeing some of the training that goes on with professional wrestling and stuff like that, one of the main things, especially out in our neck of woods anyway, that I always heard was, you know, to basically show respect to those who came before you and stuff like that. You want to be in there shaking hands, learning from all these guys, everything like that. Keep your head down, your ears open. That was one of the main things I always heard. Head down, ears open, and wait for your opportunities, and then, show the respect along the way. And that's exactly what made sense about this whole thing to me, was TJP saying, like, you think that was bad, you should have seen what shit was like before and stuff like that. And yeah, I think this is a great setup. I think I'm excited to hear Buku Dao's response to this. And inevitably, I think we're going to see a matchup between these two.
Yeah, possibly a whole series. And I think the guys will be able to work great together. But I think this is a good angle in using a real life issue that's going on in the world now, a kind of a hot button issue. And that very word alone, bullying, just really is a strong word now, and it elicits strong reactions from people, as we saw from TJ Perkins in that little promo he did there. I thought it was very well done, and I think this is an angle that could grow wings and really make for a good program later on.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to it. They've done a nice job setting it all up. We'll see where it goes from there. So up next, we have another matchup, actually. Yeah, so here's my boy Gringo Loco hitting the ring again there, Papa Smokes, after having a good discussion about him recently. Gringo Loco taking on Rocky Romero. Rocky Romero appearing from New Japan Pro Wrestling. And what an interesting matchup between these two. I guess I got my second taste of Gringo Loco in this one. And this time, I got to say, I saw a little bit more out of Gringo Loco and maybe starting to appreciate more of what he's capable of. I think, again, he still serves his place on the roster, but he served it nicely here. And we got a very respectable, good matchup here on the card.
Yeah, it was okay, I think. With the two styles of these two competitors, which are somewhat similar, I think, somewhat lucha-based, and I think, for me, this match highlighted the lack of ropes in that ring, because these are two wrestlers that really, really use the ropes a lot, the ropes and the corners for climbing up, and without them, I thought both these guys looked a little bit lost. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. They're used to working in a ring with ropes around it. But to me, this was kind of like the style of these guys didn't work. Like a guy like Zenshi kind of adapted to it a little bit better than both these guys did. Gringo Loco looked a little bit lost. I've seen him have some pretty good matches. He's not a favorite of mine or anything like that, but he's, for a guy of his body type and such like that, he can really fly and he's pretty quick. But in this match, he didn't have 80% of his arsenal at his disposal, nor did Romero for that matter. when they couldn't run the ropes and leap off of the ropes and springboard over the ropes. And so this match suffered, in my mind, a little bit for that. You liked it a little bit better than that?
I think at this point, I do have to say, I think I liked it a little bit more. And I do see your points, and I understand them for sure. I think maybe at this point, because we had been a little bit without any real action other than throwing in more of the Aztec Jungle stuff and everything, I think I was just ready for a match. And I guess I got somewhat of that here. I believe, wasn't this the where, is this the one where they did the spot into the couch, though? If I'm not mistaken? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, it was a little goofy at that point. I gotta admit that. But I mean, considering the element of what was around there and most guys doing that suicide dive to the outside in most matches nowadays, it was a little comical in an okay way to watch them do that kind of similar move right into that dirty old couch that's sitting there at ringside. So I didn't mind that part of it, I guess. And I didn't dislike the match. I enjoy Rocky Romero. I got to say, I do like his work. I think there's great potential there. So, I mean, I think I just hope it out better things for Rocky Romero.
Yeah, I like Romero too. And it saved it a little bit for me at the end with the finish that Romero used the ring post to kick off for that tornado DDT. That looked cool. The fact that they never really used anything about the ring until that finish move, then he had an idea. Once he got up in the air, he kicked off of that ring post and used it for momentum into his finish. That worked for me. That kind of saved it, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, but yeah, it was what it was. It was all right. And again, Rocky Romero picking up a win, looking strong. I hope we're going to see a lot more of him in MLW. We've talked about it before, the international flavor being utilized in MLW a lot. And that's what I love seeing. I love seeing some of these guys from New Japan coming over and taking part in it, along with, some of the guys from AAA and some of these other promotions as well. I think we get to see a great blend of different styles, and that's what Fusion really is all about, is seeing the different blend of wrestling styles from all around the world, and they're really putting it on display here. So happy to see Rocky Romero and many of the others that we're getting from around the world.
Sure, nice win for him, and good match.
Yeah. From there, again, return to Mil Muertes, Savio Vega, and the Aztec Jungle fight. This time around, though, we got this interception from Contra. Joseph Samael coming in, and he's doing a promo on Jordan Oliver. I know we talked a little bit about this. Wasn't really too sure what to think, in a sense. Like, how did Contra get the capability of intercepting a broadcast being put on by Tom Lawler? And, you know, I mean, maybe these answers will come about sometime, or maybe this was just, hey, we need to keep promoting because they were going to have a bit of a week off kind of thing before hitting up the match between Oliver and Fatu for the championship. So again, they almost had to put the little bit of promotion in there. Not sure it was necessarily the right show to do it on, but again, who are we to say we're not the ones running the show?
Yeah, they have a job to do too, like you said, in promoting that stuff. As we know, Contra doesn't play by the rules on Major League Wrestling. They don't sit with Alicia too, or do promos as the other guys do. They interrupt because Joseph Samael's got his soldiers and his workers everywhere, and they can interrupt the broadcast. So just anything MLW that was coming on, they were gonna pump their guys and pump their matches during that. So yeah, fine with me. Anytime I get to listen to Joseph Samael cut a promo, I'm pretty happy about him.
Oh damn, he's good at cutting promos. I mean, he's absolutely fantastic. But yeah, definitely. So that went down, and then from there, this is where we got into the Von Erichs. Actually, I think this is when they officially hit that live stream on Instagram, driving around in their truck, and they're gearing down, they're heading down to the ring. They want to go. They're going to go straight down to Filthy Island, which is right in their backyard, and they're ready to. Maybe place an attack, do something. They're ready to fuck shit up, is what it comes down to.
Yeah, well put, Munson. Another thing I like about the Von Erichs is that their entrance music is a Stranglehold by Ted Nugent, and they're always listening to that song. Very, very nice, very fitting. I like it.
Yeah, it works. It's so good. So I was pumped here because I'm like, you know, we're going to get the Von Erichs involvement. You know it's going to come later on, but looking forward to seeing what happens. So from there, now we got to talk about it. Here comes the finish and the return to the Aztec Temple fight. Mil Muertes, Savio Vega. How'd you feel about how this went down in the end then, Pop Smokes?
Well, I thought the end was the best part for sure. They were still brawling out at night in the jungles around Chichen Itza, and all of a sudden the bright blue tire iron showed up. I think Savio had it in his hand. Muertes got a few shots in on Vega and then took that tire iron and gave him a good shot across the head, and this knocked Vega out cold. Apparently he was down and not moving, whereupon Selena De La Renta shows up and tells Mil Muertes finish the job and hands him a shovel, and now Mil Muertes is digging a grave apparently for Savio Vega. And this is how we went off the air from this particular match, at least. Selena had promised the blood sacrifice to the Azteca underground and to the Incan gods and such. So they're kind of putting it out there that this might be the end of Savio Vegas as we know it. So very interesting developments. Did you like this part? Are we going to have to wait till the next episode to see what happens?
Yeah, and I mean, I liked how it ended. I think that it could have ended a lot sooner in this context as well, too. I mean, there was so much going back to it. Shots of the temple, shots of this, just having the guy slugging it out for long periods of time. I almost think that the tire iron could have come into play even earlier on. Like, you could have had Savio Vega aware of what he was getting himself into and not in his backyard, playing right into Mil Muertes' backyard, come in with that tire iron, and almost at that point, that's where you have it. Mil Muertes gets control of him, uses the tire iron, knocks him out, and you cut to that whole scene with Selena saying to finish the job, give him the shovel, and he starts digging. I think you could have condensed down the entire segment that came across in, I think, about four different spots in the entire night, down to a couple spots. You could have had the Aztec temple shown with the message about the blood sacrifice and everything like that, leading to a nice short piece at the end with this finish in it. I think would have been more than enough to make this a lot more interesting than it ended up being in the long term.
Yeah, I can't disagree, but I suppose they were just dealing with time issues, so I had to devote a certain amount of time to each match. But yeah, I can't disagree with that, Munson. They could have shortened that one up a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. So right after that, we got Tom Lawlor bringing Alexander Hammerstone and Richard Holiday down to ringside, kind of showing them everywhere around Filthy Island and everything. A little bit of decent comedy in here because you got guys who can do a little bit of the comedy chops while not completely making you dislike them kind of thing. Like, this was the kind of comedy where you can have a little bit of a chuckle at what they're doing, and it really didn't make anything that they do later on look stupid, I guess, so to speak.
Yeah, totally. And Holiday's a pretty funny guy. Like, I think he's probably the best at doing self-deprecating comedy in that company, and yeah, Hammer's a sidekick. He can play along with that. This was all right, but yeah, they were just involving a bit more of the talent in the Filthy Island concept, and yeah, I'm always happy to see Dynasty appearing on the show.
Yeah, so that was excellent. They're there to check things out. Right after that, we went to the top 10 from our PWI, Pro Wrestling Illustrated there. We'll go through the top 10 list just real quick here. Not a lot's changed except for, Jordan Oliver making it into the list as a singles competitor this week, hitting number 10. Heavyweight Hustle, Calvin Tankman at number 9. The other half of Injustice, Myron Reed, he's hitting up at number 8. Mil Muertes makes the list here at number 7, so being added into the mix. Richard Holiday at number 6. We got Mads Kruger at number five, really stepping up that ladder here on the top 10 for sure. Low-key hitting up at number four. And again, Leo Rush really stepping up after his unification match. Now at number three on this list. Number two goes to the man hosting Filthy Island himself, Filthy Tom Lawler. And then our boy Hammer, Alexander Hammerstone at number one, right behind the world's champion, Jacob Fatu. Again, nothing really to debate on this list, if you ask me, Pop Smokes.
Yeah, they've done a good job with it, I think, basically basing it on wins and losses and sort of momentum within the promotion. And I've never had a spot to argue about any of those ratings. PWI's been doing them for decades and decades. They know how to do a top 10 list or a top 10 rankings list. So, yeah, I agree completely.
Yeah, so good job there. And then, lo and behold, we've made it to the end of Filthy Island. It's the main event. This one was probably the most big-profile match that was listed on the card. It's why it's on the main event. This is King of the Knockouts Part 2. We got Loki on one side, and we got King Mo on the other side. You know shit's going to go down in this one, Papa Smokes, but what were your thoughts on the match itself before we get to the finale portion of this one?
Well, for one thing, I liked this main event. I thought even on Filthy Island that as we reached this part in the card of the main event that it started to have that big prize fight feel to it, that you had the feeling that that the match wasn't going to be decided by pinfall or something, that it was going to be a knockout or a submission or a tap out of some sort. So between these two guys, we've both seen King Mo and Low Key defeat their opponents in various methods, including knockouts and submissions. So this had like a good look to it. Of course, these are the guys that fought in King of the Knockouts number one as well more than a year ago, and they showed some clips of that match throughout the evening just to give you a little feel of what happened last year and a little bit of the history of what happened too, and King Mo winning the King of the Knockouts one. So I liked this. As junky as Filthy Island was meant to look, it still had the prize fighting kind of feel where it's just, we're going to have an actual fight and we'll see who wins, like the better man will win. And I got a little bit excited at the aspect of this simply because we both know that King Mo and Low Key both have a history with shoot fighting and such, and it just brings an uncertainty to the match where man, anyone can win. And we've seen Low Key in the past couple weeks have a couple of very quick knockout victories too, so you knew this one was going to be for all the marbles. And I also think as the match went on, it looked more like an MMA fight than any of their matches on this card. They grappled a lot. They did a lot of striking. And when I say a lot of striking, I don't mean like a wrestling match where there's a lot of punches and a lot of kicks to the head. For more than a couple. This looked like real fighting. So I like this strikes and takedowns. King Mo dominated the beginning of this match until Low Key could reverse a few things and get a bit of momentum going, and until he got he eventually caught King Mo in that rear chokehold, and with Mo crawling towards the ropes, the referee made the call that it was a tap out and called for the end of the match. What did you think of that finish, Munson? Did you think the referee was justified in calling that match, or did you think it was a setup?
I don't know that it was a setup. I think he was justified in calling the match for sure. I liked where it went. I really enjoyed the fact that, you know, we got to see Low Key, I guess, get one back on King Mo this time and stuff like that, which means, you know, this thing is definitely far from over between the two of them. And again, with everything that's been set up throughout this entire show, this entire night, you almost thought in the back of your mind this one was going to end screwy against Loki. Again, you almost thought the King Mole would maybe come out on top with the help of Tom Lawlor and Team Filthy at ringside, but he still managed to get one up. The referee calls it. Loki picks up the victory. And then it was time for shit to go down because we knew right then that that's when Team Filthy was going to try to get revenge now that their boy didn't pick up the victory.
Yeah, and then Lawlor, as soon as the match was called, Lawlor started shouting that the referee was in on it and that it was some kind of a dirty finish. You know, of all people to be saying that at this point, the guy that's screwed so many matches in the last few weeks, for as long as it's on his side, he doesn't mind if it's a screw. But they weren't going to have that finish. They didn't like it, so they Team Filthy all got in the ring, surrounded Loki, and started laying some hurt on them. And of course, we had seen that the Von Erichs were on their way in their Jeep, and I thought they were going to drive like right into the ring kind of thing in that Jeep, or I thought they were going to ram the ring at first because they stopped so close to it. But anyway, it was wild, good brawling when they got out, and a massive pull apart at the end there. It was a nice spot where Tom Lawlor got thrown onto the hood of the Jeep too, and looked like he dented the whole hood in and broke the windshield a bunch too, and that was a good spot too, and just building more and more heat in this feud. This is one of the main feuds in MLW, and they're sparing no expense to turn up the heat on it.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. I mean, I loved when the Von Erichs arrived. I mean, things really picked up then, and that beatdown and everything is just great. Really just driving home that this is, again, one of their major storylines they got going on. Before even considering that tag team title return match that the Von Erichs would technically be entitled to, they've got another problem on their hands. Their focus isn't that tag title at the moment. Right now, it's getting revenge on the guy and his guys who caused them to lose it in the first place, gaining back that measure of respect, and then being able to go out and hopefully comfortably get that tag team match that they not only deserve, but hopefully get it in a sense that they can go out there and have the kind of match that we know they're good at, which is a good old-fashioned tag team matchup without any of the interference from anybody else involved.
Yeah, yeah. It's also kind of interesting that that the Von Erichs aren't currently pursuing the tag team championship again right off the bat, right after losing it, but going after the source of their sorrow is Filthy Tom Lawlor, who's always plotting against them and always working against them all the time. They're going right to the source of it, and they want to defeat Team Filthy. They want to wipe them out from Major League Wrestling. So I imagine that they'll start with Dominic Guarini and Kevin Koo, the tag team there, Violence is Forever, and then try and get their hands on Tom Lawlor somewhere in that program, and then perhaps go for the tag team championship again. We'll see how this all gets booked, but we have a great feud starting up here between Team Filthy and the Von Erichs.
Well, you know, we got an MLW pay-per-view coming up down the bend. I'm almost sensing, and I'm going to put it on out there right now, I'm sensing a six-man tag match coming at the pay-per-view. ACH and the Von Erichs taking on Team Filthy.
Yeah, I think that's a really good call, and I like the look of this match, too. They can get a great match out of that, and if it shows up on the pay-per-view, all the better for us. We can enjoy it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot going to be coming out of that upcoming pay-per-view at the end of March that I'm looking forward to. A lot of build that's been happening. This helped. I mean, it was good to see what Filthy Island was about, was going to become after all this weeks of talking about it. For better or for worse, there was good points. There was not so good points. Again, I got to say the big positive overall is definitely getting something a little bit different. MLW definitely willing to go out there and try it, while at the same time still respecting all the continuity of what's going on in the company and not veering too far off the rails and making it make no sense, where they're kind of putting themselves, you know, digging a bit of a grave for themselves, trying to go forward from it.
Yeah, yeah, and we still have a few more episodes to go before this pay-per-view, which I think is at the end of March, right? And We're going to see all these feuds heat up. We're going to see Selena De La Renta and Mil Muertes going hard on the on their opponents, including Savio Vega. We're going to see this Team Filthy versus the Von Erichs. We're going to see all kinds of stuff, including Contra's various feuds versus Injustice and Hammerstone. And I'm so excited because they've done a good job in giving a nice slow build on this stuff, and then we're going to get the big payoff in a few weeks. And I'm so excited. We'll do a review of the pay-per-view, obviously, too. And yeah, this is going to be fun. And then maybe after this pay-per-view, some of those feuds will reset, and we'll get different dance partners working with each other in this too. So, you know, just it's a world of wrestling. It goes on and on. And when you have good booking, like they have in MLW, you can just look forward to more good angles and more good action.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to it each and every week. We got that build coming before the pay-per-view. I believe that's called Never Say Never, coming at the end of March. Looking forward to it. Anyone who hasn't done so already, if you haven't checked out MLW Fusion, head on over to YouTube, or if you have DAZN or Fubo TV, any of the options that there are for MLW Fusion, go and show your love and support for them. Shout these guys out on social media. You know what? I see everybody doing shout-outs to everybody over in WWE and AEW, and you don't get a whole lot of interaction from the people working in those companies. But I'll tell you what, the MLW team, the wrestlers, everybody working there, I mean, including Court Bauer himself, is willing to interact with fans. If you got something good and positive to say, they're retweeting you out. They're reaching out to people on social media and making a difference, making the experience of being an MLW fan that much more enjoyable. So go check them out. Give them a subscribe on YouTube. Do whatever you can to support MLW Fusion. We love doing these recaps and everything and being able to watch this every single week. It's been fantastic booking, and we're going to continue to keep this up. Oh, if anybody out there, though, listening, knows of any other great wrestling programs that Papa Smokes and I should be checking out, or even just one-off shows that you think are really interesting, might be down our alley, let us know in the comments section below. As always, we look forward to interacting and talking to each and every one of you. Once again, we thank you very much for tuning in to Ring Respect Radio right here on the Video Bros Network. Remember to subscribe to the channel and let all your friends know about this podcast. Share the love and help us get the name out there. We thank you very much for your time and look forward to seeing you again next time. Take care.